fans, welcome to We The Rapscast, coming at you solely in podcast form today, available on iTunes, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, and anywhere else you get your sweet, sweet podcast fix. I am Dan Grant, at SlammandDannyG on Twitter, and with me, as always, is a man who, when sun rays crown thy pine-clad hills, and summer spreads her hand, when silvern voices tune thy rills, with love the smiling land, about to return to his home province of Newfoundland, it's at Rusty Pedal Bike, Russell Pedal. Russ, how are you?
Now that is my favorite intro you've ever done for me. Way to go. That reminds me so much of being a young boy in small town Newfoundland, learning that our provincial anthem in primary school.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I never actually had heard it before.
It's a gorgeous song. It honestly is.
I looked it up. It was on Wikipedia. So I just picked the first bit, but I assumed you would enjoy that. As I just alluded to, Russell is about to go on vacation for a couple weeks back home. I was just on vacation for a week, which is why our podcast is a little delayed here. I was talking about a lot of things that have happened with the Toronto Raptors in the past couple weeks. So, Russell, what are you looking forward to going home? What's number one on your list?
Mary Brown's. You may never have heard of it, but it's basically this. It's a KFC style fast food chicken joint.
Yeah, they have one in Toronto.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, they've got a couple around. They've got a couple in Alberta, too, because there's so many Newfoundland exports there, the oil rigs and stuff. But it's really, it's super prominent in Newfoundland. Like, they have restaurants, all over the province, almost every town, basically. But they just have really good chicken, but the big thing is the taters and the gravy and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's always a big thing. And they play it up, too. Like, they know that people who move away from home want that as soon as they get back. So they have they have signs on the gate at the airport. You walk out and they're like, now that you're home, time to go to Mary Brown's. So that's pretty much what I do. That and get a pineapple crush.
Oh, pineapple, man. All these, I got to go to Newfoundland.
You absolutely do. We got all kinds of weird little quirky things like that.
Yeah. Every province has its own. I've been to quite a few. I've actually been to every province except for Newfoundland.
Now you're due.
I know, and I haven't been to the territories either, but I got to do that. But yeah, that's interesting. When you go to different places, I don't know if it's the same, but I remember when I was a kid and I went to, I think it was PEI, and they didn't have pop cans. They only have they're the same size, but they're plastic bottles because they don't like recycling aluminum or something. And the province is so small, they could just do it that way. But just little quirky things in every province. So it's I really would love to go and take a look. I hear you. I hear it's a beautiful place, Russell.
Oh, wait. And just in case they listen to this, seeing my family is the number one thing I want to do there.
Seeing your family at Mary Brown's.
Yeah, there you go. That's usually what happens. So.
Yeah. You're not going to go by yourself.
No, certainly not.
Drop your bags off.
I will drag my wife and child, as I always do.
Perfect. Okay. Well, all right. Let's get to some Raptors talk. So, as I mentioned, a few things have happened since we last recorded a couple weeks ago. Some big, big moves. Last time we had a show, we had Daniel Hackett on to talk about some of the things that the Raptors could do. We went deep into the tax talk and figured out, what they would need to do to make moves, add somebody, maybe use the mid-level exception, etc. And some of those big moves, some of those dominoes have fallen. Damari Carroll is no longer a Toronto Raptor. He was moved to the Brooklyn Nets with two picks as well, a lottery-protected first-rounder next year and the Raptors' second-round pick next year. For Justin Hamilton, who I believe, I don't know if it's official yet, but he's going to be waived.
He's gone?
Okay, all right. And they're going to use the stretch provision, I think, to pay him out, which is, a negligible amount of money. Essentially, that was just a pure salary dump so that they could get under the luxury tax. Since then as well, and I'm not sure of the official way this move wound up working, but Corey Joseph was traded to the Indiana Pacers ostensibly for CJ Miles. Do you know, Russell, did they officially use the mid-level exception on Miles, or was it a straight trade?
Good question. I don't know the exact breakdown of that.
Yeah, because I know they'd gone back and forth with it to see how they were. Either way, it doesn't really matter. It was essentially just logistics. They were going to move Joseph either into the Pacers cap space. And I think that is what happened, because I think the Pacers wound up sending the Raptors the rights to some guy from 2009, some nobody. To complete the trade. So I think, because you can't trade something for nothing. So then I think Miles was signed with the mid-level exception. But they haven't announced that officially yet, because there's a press conference tomorrow. We're recording this on a Monday. It's Monday afternoon. There's a press conference tomorrow at 3:15 Eastern time with Masai Ujiri and CJ Miles, where I'm sure they'll announce the official signing, and we'll get some more details on that. So by the time you listen to this, that'll probably already have happened. So to summarize, Carroll and Kojo plus two picks are out. CJ Miles is in. Obviously, the tax implications made this necessary for Toronto. But Russell, how do you think it affects the team on the floor?
Honestly, I think that the team came out okay in all this. We've been talking about this for a couple months now about how this was all going to play out. I think that it played out pretty much how I would have liked in terms of getting Lowry and Ibaka. I'm really sad to see PJ Tucker go. Once PJ Tucker was gone, I was still hoping for Patterson, so I was sad to see him go as well, especially at the like ridiculously low price he went for in OKC with the Thunder. But overall, I think adding CJ Miles after that kind of made me feel a bit better about losing like all those guys. Like, that's a lot of guys to go when you look at Carroll, Tucker, Patterson, and Corey Joseph. You're making way for the young guys. That's clearly what's going on here. So to also add CJ Miles is just an for the necessary shooting and depth on the wing that they were sorely lacking. So the ceiling is perhaps odd to say this, but maybe the ceiling's raised, but I think the floor is also lowered on the team. So I'm not sure how I feel yet. There's a lot I need to see before I know.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there'll be, you're going to see, I think personally, the guys you just mentioned, the young guys getting a lot of run next year. And I think that's good. I think even if it costs you a few wins, you know, before Christmas, I think that's the way to grow the team organically, because obviously with a lot of the team is still basically capped out. There's not a lot of space, and that's going to be the case for the foreseeable future with Ibaka, Lowry, and DeRozan all locked in for the next 3 years. Unless they can move him, Jonas Valanciunas is locked in. They have all their big money is tied up. So letting those young guys grow and letting the guys on those cost control deals grow and play a lot and, you know, shoulder more of a burden is the kind of the only way the team can improve in the macro sense of things. If that costs you some things in the micro, I think that's fine. Especially Corey Joseph being traded makes sense when you have DeLon Wright and you have Fred VanVleet, and they both showed last year that they were ready for more time. You know, spending $8 million on a guy, essentially the same salary as what you're giving CJ Miles, didn't really make sense to pay your fourth point guard, even though he's your second point guard on the depth chart. But, you know, having four point guards didn't really make too much sense. Like you said, having Miles in as a placeholder and a shooter on the wing is good. The fact that he went for even the Patterson left for less money than what Miles is going to wind up getting, like significantly less money, is pretty crazy to me. And did you hear the comments Masai Ujiri made about that?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, he was saying basically that they had made the offer to Tucker because they offered Tucker 3 years, $33 million.
Wow.
And which is I don't know if that's official or if that's a rumor, but that was the number that I had heard reported, which was more than he got from the Rockets eventually. One less year, but more money total.
PJ Tucker. Yeah, no, I knew yes, about yeah. that one. Sorry.
No, yeah.
I sounded surprised. I thought that was Patterson. No.
No. That was the offer they made for Tucker.
They didn't make an offer for Patterson, right?
Exactly. And that's what Masai Ujiri said. He said once we went to Tucker, we made him the offer. Once that didn't fall, you know, once that didn't happen and we weren't talking with Patterson at the same time, he just kind of moved on. And there was he didn't say officially, but it didn't sound like there was any offer made. And, you know, as good as Patrick Patterson was, and I loved him as a Raptor, I think he did a great job here, and he was really underrated defensively, a lot of different. And he was, the second best guy in terms of opponent field goal percentage when he guarded players one-on-one last year in the entire NBA. He's going to be a great fit in OKC.
That's a great stat.
It's really cool, right? Yeah, players only shot 37.5% when he guarded them one-on-one last year, which was a better mark than Draymond Green, better mark than Kawhi Leonard.
Now I miss him even more.
Yeah, so he's going to be a good fit there, but I think you saw in the playoffs, it was maybe time for him to go somewhere new because Lowry and DeRozan, they, you know, for all the talk about them, you know, taking the ball and playing one-on-one, Patterson took a lot of three-pointers. He got a lot of open shots, and a lot of them were hitting back iron, especially in the playoffs the last couple of years. So maybe it was just time for a fresh start for everybody. I don't really, but again, for them to be paying CJ Miles $10 million, I think roughly more than what Patterson got is not bad. I'm fine with it because I think the price is fine for Miles, but it's surprising, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the interesting thing in all this is that I just lost my point. That's bad. that's podcasting for you. That's a, no, yeah, I lost it.
That's okay. So how about this then? What about, so obviously we talked about getting rid of Carol. We wish him well. It's too bad that he never really panned out. He was a really great guy in the community. And, you know, and that's the nicest thing you can say about his tenure as a Raptor. That kind of speaks for itself. He just was never healthy. And you hope that playing in Brooklyn, he can get some run and, you know, maybe find himself in the next couple of years. But they had to pay 2 draft picks to get rid of his contract, which is, I was shocked when I heard that, to be honest. I knew, I thought maybe they'd have to pay a first, but the fact that it was a first and a second was pretty surprising. What do you think about that, Russell? Is that, was that, I mean, obviously, if that's what you had to pay, that's what you had to pay. But it, does that officially make Damari Carroll Masai Ujiri's only misstep as the head of the Raptors basketball operations?
I think the problem here is that we look at these things in a vacuum. And yeah, we look like you made, but you made an excellent point. You propped it up perfectly there by saying like, this is the price you had to pay. Like it's nice to say like, okay, you have to dump Carroll's contract. Like that costs something. That's not an easy thing to do, to get someone to use their cap space on a player that has been for the most part ineffective the last 2 seasons, or at least not effective enough. Mm-hmm. And especially a team like Brooklyn, who he doesn't fit their timeline at all. He's just like, he's there to take up space.
Yeah. They took him for the picks. So they want the picks. That's it.
Exactly. So yeah. I think that shedding him was definitely a priority, given the fact that the team was so far into the tax that they absolutely needed to get rid of someone that cost a bit of money. And obviously, you're not getting rid of your big three of DeRozan, Lowry, and Ibaka. So you're looking at more your secondary guys and tertiary guys. So the only ones with salaries that matched, of course, were him and Valanciunas. And Valanciunas is a unique player. And it's not really someone who really fits the current NBA, but he brings a skill set that is still interesting and useful at times. And he's a very good rebounder, and he's got good offensive touch, and you know he's an efficient offensive big, and he'll be good in some role eventually in his career. Like, he's not a complete bust. Whereas Carroll is someone you weren't getting a lot out of the last couple of years, and you wanted more time for Norman Powell. And there it is. My point just came back to me. Okay, there we go. It's not a complete loss. The interesting thing about these moves and losing Tucker doesn't fit the mold, but everything else, like Corey Joseph being gone and all of a sudden there being more room for DeLon Wright, this is stuff people have wanted. Like, if you look at, if by people I mean like judging the pulse on Raptors Twitter, when watching games, is that people are like, want more DeLon Wright. They want more Poeltl. They want more Norm Powell. They want less Carroll. They want, you know, the pendulum has gone back and forth on Valanciunas, more or less. You know, Patterson, by the end of the year, the team had so much depth that, like, Patterson was playing games where he was getting, like, 14 or 15 minutes. And it was like, okay, we need more Patterson. It's like, yeah, but then what do? You get less Ibaka. And because now having Ibaka is like a supercharged Patterson, which made Patterson a bit expendable. Having guys like Norman Powell getting better made Carroll expendable. Having a guy like DeLon Wright get better would make Corey Joseph expendable. So those guys being able to, you know, bring the team to this point before the young guys were on the team or ready, they did their job and that's fine. But now it's like you have this kind of embarrassment of depth that we've talked about and said is really good. But at the same time, it's a problem, because even in the playoffs, I remember we were constantly talking about rotations and who should be getting more time, less time, and stuff like that. So this clarifies those things a bit more. So yes, that is me kind of looking for a silver lining. It would have been great to retain other guys, especially Tucker. That one I'm really sad about. And he's going to be such a great fit in Houston, and we're going to watch him, like, you know, go deep into the playoffs with the team and be really jealous of that. But I think overall I can kind of get behind the moves, because it's fun to root for young players. And I think about that, and I think about when you have a team, you're either, you know, if you're in a good playoff position or you're rebuilding, you're either cheering for a team that can make a deep playoff run, or you're cheering for your young guys and dreaming of what they might be. And we kind of get to do both now, where we get to kind of imagine that this is a team where in the East, it's still a top 4 team in the East. You know, it has the chance to be the second best team, or at worst, it's like the 4th or 5th best team, in my eyes anyway.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's still good. So we get to cheer for a playoff run, 2nd or 3rd round, which, again, we're only a few years removed from that never, ever happening. So, again, I'm still fine with it. But we also still get to look at guys like Poeltl and Norm Powell and get excited about their development in DeLon Wright. And even you go further down the line to maybe Bruno does something with the team this year, like Pascal Siakam might be worth something. And even this is all without even talking about our new rookie, right? So
absolutely. We're going to get into talking about those young guys later. Before we do that, and I agree with what you said, Russell, I think that is fun to root for the young guys, and I want to talk about them extensively in a few minutes. First, though, I want to talk about the newest Raptor, CJ Miles. What do you think of CJ Miles? I mean, obviously, we talked about him being a good addition on the wing. He's a bit one-dimensional. If you look at his stat sheet, 63.2% of his shot attempts last season were from three. He did make last year, by far, a career high 41.3% of them. He's a career 36% three-point shooter. He's had a couple seasons close to 40%. The last 2 years before this, 2 years ago, he was 34%, 36% the year before, and then obviously set the career high last year. So there's a little bit of risk there. He's not a total dead-eye shooter, but he's a good three-point shooter. He's been a negative in terms of box plus minus anyway on the defensive end. What do you think of CJ Miles, Russell?
He fills a need. He's a role player. The team didn't necessarily need a go-to scorer or anything like that. So they've got those. They didn't need they basically needed a guy who could shoot threes and play some defense on the wing, basically to fill Damari Carroll's role, ostensibly. And CJ Miles was a better Damari Carroll than Damari Carroll last year. So
yes,
you know, and he's a tad younger, so it's not that bad. Like, you know, a guy that shot, yeah, the career percentage, like you said, 36%, but last year he shot 41.3% on an Indiana team that wasn't that great. So maybe now he gets a few more open shots. His defensive rating last year was 111, which is not that great, but the both years before that on a better defensive Indiana team, he had a 104. That's excellent. Yeah. So that could be okay.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that he'll be a decent 3-and-D wing guy just as long as we need him to be, right? Like if you have like Norm Powell, like who's starting, him or Norm Powell? I think that's the biggest question here.
Well, that's the next thing I was going to ask you. If you see how do you think the Raptors rotation will start out? I think that's kind of the biggest question mark. So I'm going to read all these things. I wrote them all down and you can respond as you see fit. Does CJ Miles or Norm start at the 3? Do you think Valanciunas starts or comes off the bench? If it's off the bench and you're starting Serge Ibaka at the 5, then who starts at the 4? Does Toronto still need to add another power forward? Is Pascal Siakam ready for a bigger role? And do you think Bruno sees real minutes next season? Those are all my questions.
Okay, do I have to ring those off having memorized them as you said them, or can you read them back to me again?
okay, so let's start with, do you think Miles or Norm starts at the 3?
I think Miles starts at the 3 to start, because I think that the Raptors still need to establish a good bench unit, because that's been kind of their bread and butter the last few years, and now a lot of the regular pieces of that are gone, like Patterson and so forth. So if you have Norm Powell playing bench minutes where he's kind of a go-to guy in that role, as opposed to going, being a spot-up shooter in the starting lineup around Lowry and DeRozan, I think that's a better role for him to start. Like he'll get more minutes now, obviously. Like they're looking forward to him, but I think stacking up your starting lineup when you have Miles, who's a perfect fit as that guy that can be in the lineup and doesn't need the ball as much as Lowry and DeRozan, and can be that release valve on the wing and in the corners, I think that's a way better role for him. So
yeah, I think Norm being the backup kind of at the 2 and the 3 is a great role for him, as he can be like that traditional sixth man, because Norm can get really hot when he gets, you know, comes in and he can shoot, he can handle the ball a little bit, get to the rim, doing all those things. And so if he's coming in, you know, and maybe DeRozan gets in foul trouble or has to come out, or if Miles is not, you know, shooting well, whatever, if you can get him in at one of those wing spots, I think you'll see him kind of eventually play, maybe not even eventually, maybe right away, he's going to play more minutes than Miles, depending on matchups, but they'll kind of go with a hot hand between the two of them. But I think you're right. I think Miles will be the one that starts there.
Yeah.
Okay. Question two was, this is a big one. Do you think Jonas Valanciunas, that's the first time I've done that in a while. Do you think he starts?
Yes. It's the right role for him. I think that he's a guy that benefits from confidence building things, like that kind of move, like keeping him in the starting lineup. I think that he performs better from that role than what we've seen in the past. I think that moving him out of the starting lineup would take a lot of the rebounding out of the lineup, and I still value that a lot. I know a lot of people really are interested in being fast and being dynamic and being flexible on defense and today's NBA and stretching the floor and all these different things. But at the end of the day, he is a solid rebounder. And, you know, in games when he gets going at the beginning, he can be pretty lethal, right? So when he gets rolling, if that's something that happens, fine. If not, then you have a quick hook for him and you go to your smaller lineup. But I think that's a better role for him. It's for now. I think long term, I'd like to see him kind of go into more of a Greg Monroe type role with the Bucks, where he, or like what they tried to do with Al Jefferson in Indiana, which didn't really work out. But that concept of this big bruiser on the second lineup who can just in a reserve role who can kind of beat up second units.
Yeah.
I think he could be good in that kind of role eventually. But for now, I think that, you know, he's still young. He still hasn't necessarily reached his full potential. So maybe we see a bit more from him this year, not necessarily adding a 3-pointer. Like, I don't want to see that.
No.
But, you know, it just a bit more decisiveness. If he worked on that this summer and we see that out the gate, then I'm perfectly fine with still starting him and then adjusting it as we go. I don't necessarily like when teams jump to just try to be the Warriors right away, because even they still start a traditional center. So you can still do it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that that's also just going to happen by necessity, because I don't think they're going to want to start. If you start Serge Ibaka at center, then who are you playing at power forward? There's just nobody. I mean,
that's the perfect point. Yeah.
You can start Pascal Siakam, I guess, if you think he's ready, but I don't think that's what they're going to want to do, at least not off the hop.
No.
And there's not really a lot of other guys who are going to play at power forward. You can play some small lineups where you might play Miles, Norm, DeRozan, and Lowry with Ibaka, but that's a really small lineup.
Yeah, it's too small.
It is too. I think you could do it in stretches, maybe, depending on who you're playing against.
Yeah, just not long term.
And that's not a starting lineup, to be sure. Mm-hmm. I think with the loss of Patterson and Tucker, you know, you really don't have a lot of depth at the power forward spot. So it'll be interesting to see. I think we're going to talk about Summer League in a minute. Siakam has played really well, and I think that's good for Toronto, because they're going to need him to come in and actually play some minutes at some point, even if it's just as a backup. OG Anunoby, another guy, he's not going to be ready, I don't think, but
he's coming off injury too, right?
So. Totally, and I think he should. Honestly, I would be totally content if he played 100% of his minutes in the G League this year and just worked on his shot and played a ton and worked his way back from injury. He's a guy who plays the three and somewhat the four. He's that kind of, you know, that Tucker-ish positionally, anyway, that they're missing. But okay, so I think that's pretty much what we said. Does Toronto need to add? Would you, if you had your preference, would Toronto somehow add another power forward?
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I mean, I was kind of hoping they would end up with someone like Ersan Ilyasova or Luke Mbah-Mute or someone that kind of does that 3-4 type thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they haven't gotten anyone, and the list of people left is pretty thin, and then you're looking at buyouts down the road. So I think this might be another situation where they probably need to add it. Now, I don't know how their flexibility works with the way that they're trying to stay under the tax and things like that, and they can't really take salary back. So when that gets to be mid-season and your guys like Serge Ibaka are available like they were to you last year, might not be the same. You might not be a buyer in the same sense that you were in the past. So I don't know. Hopefully a Siakam or a Poeltl kind of emerges as someone that can kind of – allow lineups to shift a little bit, but we don't know that yet. So they might have to add someone.
Yeah, I don't think they... I mean, that's the thing is, I don't think they have to know right now. I think a lot of teams... I heard Daryl Morey say this on the Low Post, but it's something that I've always thought is true as well. A lot of teams like to finish
their roster.
It's not even teams, sorry, because I don't think teams do this. It's fans. Yeah. Fans want the team to be done now or to be done yesterday and to have no flaws. That's just not how it works, because you either wind up, if you're a team, someone who wants to do that, you wind up overpaying people. You wind up giving Tim Hardaway $71 million. Or you wind up, I don't know, you're not going to finish your team. Teams are a work in progress. It's okay for them to go into the season with a roster that isn't perfect and just see guys, give guys a chance. Let Pascal Siakam play 15 minutes a game till Christmas to see what he can do. And if he can hang and do it, then that's great. Then you found your solution. If he can't, then you can address that. But I think you have to give those guys the opportunity.
I think that's a very important point. And like you made a great point earlier when you mentioned the fact that, you know, you can make mistakes in the regular season. Like you don't have to be perfect there. It's really where you need to prove your worth as a team now is really in the playoffs. So if you lose a game here and there because you're giving Siakam more time than maybe he's ready for, I mean, that was great for him last year. And that's probably a big part of the reason why he's tearing up the D-League a bit, or the Summer League a bit this year, mm-hmm. is because, you know, he had those reps last year in bigger situations. And when you're in the Eastern Conference and the way that it's thinned out in terms of its star power, and you're probably going to have fewer teams competing this year, you can probably afford on a night when you have a back-to-back to kind of give those young guys even more run. And if it doesn't work out for you, fine. In the long run, it probably will. And you don't need – and it's a great point you brought up from that podcast that, you know, we don't need to finish the team right now, because a lot evolves over the season too, because – you know, you see how other teams shape up, and then you say, okay, well, you know, you got to do this to be able to compete with the, you know, whichever team, depending on who gets whoever else, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and say, you don't know who's going to be available, right? There's always a team that thinks they're going to be a competitive team and has everything fall apart and then looks to sell their pieces. And exactly. you want to be a team that has those available pieces to move, you know. And maybe Jonas Valanciunas is a guy that starts to look attractive if a team can't get anything else, or... you know, you have other places. You have Norm Powell, who's going to be, they're going to have to pay after this year. So, I mean, I don't want to move Norm Powell. I like both those players. But just in theory, those are guys that would be, you know, kind of attractive assets to another team.
Me too. And if like someone like Poeltl becomes a better Valanciunas and a cheaper Valanciunas, then maybe you can move a Valanciunas and start a Poeltl and Ibaka and use Valanciunas to trade for a better expiring power forward, and then you have, you know, you have Ibaka and this other guy, and maybe you do mm-hmm. that instead, or, you know, Poeltl's still in the mix there somewhere. Yeah. You have options depending on how things turn out for these players. And it's, you know, you're obviously looking in the long term anyway, because you're dealing with these young players. So mm-hmm. Nothing has to be ready to go right away.
Yeah, no, I agree. One thing we want to tell the listeners is that we're going to be kind of experimenting with our format a little bit right now. One thing I heard at least overwhelmingly in feedback was that the 90-minute podcasts were a bit too long, and that people were looking for kind of shorter things where we did more kind of quick hits and talked about a lot of content and, you know, got in and got out, and that's great, and we're happy to do that as well. So this is gonna be our last point for today. We had a couple other things on the list that we're going to talk about, but I think we'll save them for another pod, if that's okay with you, Russell.
Yeah, that's a great idea, because that's good for us too. I know that I've heard that feedback as well, and mm-hmm. honestly, I think we would rather do things that way for now as well, especially in the off season. It's fun.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so the last thing I wanted to talk about, and this is a famous, was the now sort of infamous thing that Masai Ujiri said in his season-ending press conference, where he talked about the need for a culture reset. Now, that's something that is all over Toronto media all the time. It's one of my least favorite sports tropes, where people talk about the need for a culture change, because it's so ambiguous. It can mean a lot of things. And obviously, when he said that, a lot of fans jumped to the conclusion that he meant changing the style of play. And by changing the style of play, that meant changing out the players. Now, he recently spoke, Masai Ujiri did, recently spoke with Tim McAuliffe of Tim and Sid. And I'm paraphrasing this, but he said it was a misnomer that line, culture reset, meant just trading away some or all or even some of the players. It meant remembering to be hungry the way they had been previously, that they still haven't reached their goals, and that they shouldn't be complacent, which he felt the team had grown somewhat complacent last year. Now, I want to know your thoughts on that, Russell. Do you think that's a cop-out? Do you think Masai just misspoke and regrets the words that he used? Or do you believe there's truth to that?
No, you know what? I kind of believe it. I don't know if that's me being naive, but... Mm-hmm. I think that fits. Like, I think you could say I'm looking for a culture reset and honestly mean that, like, the culture of the team and the hunger that they had a few years ago, you'd like to see back. So you want to hit the reset button and get back to that again and do whatever it takes to get to that, whether that's motivating the guys internally, whether that's getting rid of a couple guys, whether that's promoting a couple guys, whatever it takes mm-hmm. to get that fire going again, fine. We may have all jumped to a conclusion and thought, okay, now they need to hit more, they want to hit more threes, or now they don't want to play as much iso ball, or they want to get more ball movement or something like that. Like, I think, you know, it was easy for the media and the fans to jump to these conclusions, and, you know, because I think that if Masai Ujiri, especially in his time as GM, both for the Raptors and other teams, has been a guy that owns up to his comments.
Yeah.
And, if he thinks afterwards that what he said was not a good idea, like he'll say like, yeah, I said that and here's why I said that and I apologize for that. Here's what I think now.
Yeah, totally.
So I think that he has a history of being honest and open and, you know, transparent. And I believe him. If he says, no, I meant this and it was misinterpreted, then, you know, I'm fine with that explanation.
I completely agree. I think that when if you watch the clip of him when he's talking to Tim, he was kind of laughing. Not laughing, but smiling as he said it. Because I think he knew the kind of shitstorm it sort of set off. Because everyone assumed that, you know, oh, Lowry's gone when he said that. Or they assumed, oh, Ibaka's going to go away. Or they're going to make some kind of a massive change. Or maybe they'll trade DeMar DeRozan because he doesn't play in the pace and space way. Which is what, you know, the kind of beautiful basketball that everyone wants to see. In this Warriors era of, you know, 3-and-D and, you know, non-traditional centers and all that stuff. But I do understand what he's saying. We've talked about it this whole podcast about you letting the young guys take a bigger role. That is, in and of itself, a culture reset.
Yeah, he accomplished it, right?
Yeah, you're letting those guys take a bigger ownership of the team. They're going to push the guys ahead of them. And I think Dwayne Casey talked recently about they're going to try to, you know, rely less on help if they can and try to just really focus on guarding their own man. We'll see how that goes, you know, with a guy like DeMar DeRozan. We'll see if CJ Miles can get back to the way he was a couple of years ago. He's shown that he can do it, but you hope he can. But they have guys who can play defense. DeLon Wright is a guy that strikes me as a, you know, a potentially lethal defender if he can stay on the floor because with his shooting. In terms of his length and everything like that. Norm Powell's gotten a tremendous wingspan. Ibaka obviously played better defense once he came here from Orlando. They have guys who can. Lowry's a bulldog. If he doesn't have the size, but he's such a smart defender. They have guys that can play defense. So it'll be interesting to see if that's the kind of identity that they search for.
Yeah, exactly. I think you make an excellent point too of the young guys pushing the guys ahead of them. Like, that's going to make a team hungry when you've got guys that know they're still playing for their minutes and they've been given this chance and these roles to step up and play an important role on the team, that they're going to be hungry to get out there and win. So maybe that gets rid of a bit of the complacency with the veterans if that was what was actually going on there. And so I think all in all, whether he meant, you know, he was going to change the style of play or by moving players, or if that's just the conclusion we all jump to, regardless, the culture has been reset, so to speak, because the team is undeniably different now than it was this time last year.
Totally. And I think you see with the very clear window that he set with the veterans as well. Nobody's signed longer than 3 years. Even CJ Miles just now, 3 years. Kyle Lowry, 3 years. Ibaka, 3 years. DeRozan's 3 years plus an option. But they're all right around that same window, and it's not a big one.
And so, it says something too, that this idea that people, this questioning, does Lowry even want to be here and stuff like that? Like, you just had three guys in Lowry, Ibaka, and Miles, who you just named, that signed to be here, that want to be here, that want to play, that want to, you know, give Cleveland and Boston a shot. So, you know, sorry to cut you off there, but I thought that was a really important point that I wanted to echo.
Yeah, definitely. No, and I think that's important. So I'm very interested to see. You know, there's only so much talking we can do about it. We got to see how this team comes together on the floor come training camp. It's the summertime. We're going to take probably another week off, I think, before we record again. Russell, as we mentioned, is going back home. Are you taking your microphone with you?
I'm not taking my actual podcasting gear. No, I considered it, but I'm deciding against it. But I will have a set of headphones that have a decent microphone if there's ever any need for an emergency pod for some big move, like if the Raptors trade for Carmelo Anthony or something like that. But at the end of the day, no. I mean, at the very least, you could have a guest, and I'll be back the week after that, and we'll get going again. I don't know if there'll be a lot to talk about anyway in the dog days of summer, but we'll figure something out.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe we'll do a nonsense podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
Copying our heroes, the starters.
Good stuff.
A fantastic job with those in the offseason. Okay, so Russell, why don't you tell the people where they can find us? If you want to send them some emails, we'd really appreciate it. Maybe leave us some feedback of what you think of the new format on iTunes or any of the other places that you get your podcast. We'd really appreciate that too. Russell, where can the people find us?
Yes, they can get us at We The Rapscast on Twitter, on Facebook.com/WeTheRapscast. And you can email us at wetherapscast@gmail.com. And, of course, get that feedback in because, maybe we can make a mailbag episode out of out of it at some point or something like that to really get those flames going, because it's about to be a very cold front up north.
August is the only month the NBA has not much going on.
No.
But before you know it, Russell, it'll be training camp. So
Good call.
I know. Okay. All right. Well, I am Dan Grant, at @SlamDannyG on Twitter. Sorry.
You always hesitate a bit with the outro.
I do. It's cute.
Because you do so well on all the rest of the parts, I must say. But for some reason, that part always makes you trip up. You always want to call yourself by your Twitter handle.
I don't want it to be over.
Yeah, fair enough. You want to run that again, just to be sure?
Sure. I am Dan Grant, @SlamDannyG on Twitter.
And I am Russell Pedal, @RustyPedalBike on Twitter.
And get out the salami and cheese, mama, because this podcast is over. Whoa, 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 whoa.